She don't. She eats burgers. Like,
if I look at a burger, I get fat.
The money, designer, the drip. Don't got a cap, I'm as real as a gift. Bet on myself and I triple the flip. Came from the streets, I'ma stick to the script. We popping bottles like we went a trip. Rather fill up accounts than empty a clip. 10 on the ground, so I never slip. They love you, they hate you, I'm watching them switch. Switch, 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 switch. They hate you, they love you, I'm watching them switch. Switch.
Yee, yee, yee. Y'all already know what it is, your boy Chance, the Be Yourself Podcast. Got my brother in the house, Rook. We are pleasured and honored to have a special guest today. But since Rook and her go back like four flats, I'm going to let him introduce him.
Like four flats. Hold down. Yo. Oh, my God.
Yo, what's good, y'all? This is a special episode because we got a super talented artist, talented individual here with us today that I just so happen to know since, like, the Sandbox. 23-time award-winning filmmaker, singer-songwriter, Sakina Amon in the house. What's good?
Hey, what's up, y'all? Thank you for having me, Daryl the Chance. This is fire. I'm excited.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead, Rook. I'm going to let you run point.
Word, I get to shoot first. I wanted to like go way back and stuff like that, but I can't because you sent out this promo clip for a film you got coming real soon, mm-hmm. and it has me in tears even till this very moment. Let's talk about it.
Okay, so this film is called Hood Meditations, Manifesting a Lick, and the premise of the film is that a supposed ex-con is promising that he can help criminals or aspiring criminals to manifest the greatest, most successful heist that they've ever had. And so they're coming to him as the hood guru to be a better criminal. And they're doing that through the sacred laws of the universe. So, yeah.
That's a nice concept. I like that.
Yep. Yep, that's pretty much what it's going to be about. So it's going to be, and I play the lead, which his name is Boss. He's the hood guru. I play a male character. And that was pretty fun. It was pretty interesting.
So the promo was playing in my head. We're going to plug that in. All right. That's going to be, there's going to be a link to that.
Yes, please do. Please do.
He's sending that group chat. That shit was funny.
My fellow gangbangers, hood boogers, and gangsters alike.
Yeah, we're on the street. The hood guru's meditation class has increased lick potential by 75%, son.
Yo, son, that's like 3/4, my nigga.
Facts, bro.
After my journey to Sri Lanka, I discovered that the proper way to live is through meditation.
Yo, so what? You
what?
Try to get those kids.
Hey, whoa. Is he coming to me with the lack mentality? See, we're gonna need to act like the lick already happened in order to be successful.
Talk your shit, bro.
In order to attract success.
Yeah.
Welcome. Take a seat.
More than just talented, though, by the way. Yo, if you haven't heard this song, you got to hear this song because you got to love the skin that you in.
Yes. Thank you. I appreciate it. I actually only have that song on SoundCloud, which, yeah, I have not put that song on like all the Spotify and other streaming platforms, but they can hear other songs on streaming platforms that they have. But yes, Spotify is where I keep like my nuggets that I'm going to build on in the future. So, yeah.
All right. So after the episode, I'll put all those things in the description box. You can check that out.
Thank you.
All right. So question for me, which is generally how I started, is like, when did you know, like, this is what you wanted to do? Like, for real, for real.
You know what's interesting? I think I knew it was like just being an artist was what I wanted to do when I was really young. I think in my notebook when I was like 7, I wrote that I wanted to be an actress, a teacher, a psychologist, and a singer.
Okay.
And but I said, I think I said therapist instead of psychologist. But yeah, I wrote all that stuff. And then when I was 8 years old, I wrote my first song. And well, that's not true. When I was 6 years old, I wrote a song, but that'll count. When I was 8 years old, I wrote like my real song. And my sister's friends, she's way older than me. So my sister's friends who were like teenagers, they were like 16. They were like, your 8 year old sister wrote a line saying, I'm sitting here all alone. I'm sitting here with a broken glass of cologne. Like what? What she know about broken glasses of cologne?
Yeah.
So I knew I wanted to be a creative writer or something. And I knew that it was in me, but I didn't understand the concept of careers at that age. I just knew that I wanted to do that, you know?
That makes sense. Cause I don't know the age, but I'm going to say it was kind of around that I knew I wanted to do music. Cause I always performed, like when my mom's friends came over, I would always have like a Michael Jackson glove and I'd come around and like singing songs and shit. So I always, but I didn't really know until like I heard of Pac. And then once I heard Tupac, I knew that's exactly what I wanted to do.
Oh, that's fine. Thank you, Tina. If we didn't have you today, I would have never heard that shit. I don't think Breezy heard that shit. We don't hear nothing before Tupac. Everything post Tupac, we know as inspirational. I ain't hear nothing about no Michael Jackson glove and performing in front of people.
I never told you that. I thought I did.
Oh my God. No, that's amazing. Like Michael Jackson, I feel like inspired. Like if Michael Jackson didn't inspire you, you're not live inside. Like you're not. I used to watch Michael Jackson movies when I was like literally like 3-4 years old. My aunt told me when I was 3 years old, I came to her crying like, and she's like, "Why are you crying?" I'm like, "You know the song, Heal the World, Make It a Better Place." She said, "I literally came to her crying, talking about." It's so beautiful, and I was 3 years old talking about the song is so beautiful.
I think if any person that's an entertainer says that they weren't influenced by Michael, they're lying.
Yeah, right. And my dad, it's funny you say that, used to come to Michael Jackson Glove because my dad told me when I was one, he said he knew I was gonna be a singer because I'd literally be one during his rehearsals. He's a reggae artist, and during his rehearsals, I'd be like, you know, mad little and just like walking around in his rehearsals. And then one day I just started singing at 1 year old, like just mad high ass notes.
So did you start singing?
He's already working on it.
Huh?
So did you start
He's singing? Already working on it.
Oh, my bad.
Oh, already working on it? Did I start singing?
Yeah. Did you start singing first? And then it kind of changed into I wanted to act?
I think I did both simultaneously because at like family functions, I used to be the one who told all the stories. They'd be like, go, tell everybody this story about, and I would play like every character in the story. And they would be like, yo, she sounds just like her. She sounds just like him. So I knew how to mimic people and imitate and like just be a clown, almost like a clown. So I've always been just like this silly, goofy person. And I think eventually it led to like one woman shows, you know, and then like performing in little churches here and there. And then it evolved to like performing when I was in like high school and in college, I started touring with an acting group in college and started to like get money from it and stuff like that. Yeah.
I think the mimicking thing is funny because again, it's funny how the stories are kind of the same. Like I used to think I can sing. I'm pretty sure I was decent. Like we ain't gonna do it now, but I'm pretty sure. Because I used to actually go like to acting coach. I mean, not acting coach, a singing coach. I used to like my vocals. But the mimicking part is because I didn't really know like where I was, like the tenor or whatever like that. So so I would sing every part of Boyz II Men, like every dude.
Yo, that's my Boyz II Men is my song.
Then I would sing John B. Then I would sing Babyface. So like it don't matter who was out, especially like it's hard to talk about it now because of whatever. But R. Kelly, I sing all R. Kelly, whatever. But I used to mimic so that whenever I sang, it didn't matter what it was because I could go there because I was used to mimicking different people. So
right, and you sound just like people are like, yo, you sound just
I believe I sound just like him, but I don't know if that's true or not. But
your mama gonna tell you you sound just like him, but you never know.
Yeah, my mama.
I restricted all my singing to the shower. Thank you very much.
The shower should be lit though.
Done. The acoustics is great.
The acoustics in the shower be different.
Then if you have the lights off with a candle in the background, it's crazy.
Need that glow in the dark shower head.
So yeah, that's funny.
So that's why I use Chance though, because I said I need a name that's not going to be like C Murder or somebody that's got to be cool. And then if I do want to end up rapping, I need it to kind of, you know, go both ways. You know what I mean?
See, C Murder ain't that bad. Like, I actually,
you're a singer, it is.
I fucks with C Murder. It was true.
Okay, so I had
you could say, you could have said C, like C Murd. You know what I'm saying? Or maybe C M or Scene. You know?
That's true. Yeah. Yeah. As I evolved and more people took my name, like Chance the Rapper and Chance from the Stallions.
That real loving Chance.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's
a real loving Chance.
Yeah, you remember?
It was right after that Flavor Flav shit.
Yeah, they were on a reality show. Yeah, there's a boy named Chance. And then I think his brother passed away. So then I started evolving, whatever, and I was being funny with Bleezy, our other friend. And I said, all right, I'm not Chance anymore. You're going to start calling me Chance. And then that was it.
Chance, that's deep. That's deep. Chance. So is that how it's pronounced? Chance?
No.
Okay.
I wish I had a hat nearby because a part of me, shit, I'm tossing this shit like a flag. Son, I love all this artistical shit that you talking. When I met you, you are the only girl in the gym that can catch me. That don't make no sense.
Yo, I'm mad fast. Like, I ain't gonna lie. I was the fastest person in the whole gym. Like, I'm still fast. They tried to recruit me when I was in college. They tried to recruit me for the track team because I was just mad fast. And my legs was just so, like, I think, like, people always thought I was a dancer or a runner. Like, I got it from my father because my father's a black belt. And all of his kids is mad muscular for no reason. Like, my brothers and my sister, they don't work out for a damn. They mad lazy. They bodies is like fit as hell. My sister looks like,
those are the people I hate.
Yo, my sister look like Layla Ali, and she eats burgers. Like,
if I look at a burger, I get fat.
Exactly. So that's so people assume that I was a runner or a dancer because I was like muscular, but you know, or toned or whatever. So you know, I've always been fast. I've always been athletic. I think it's just in the genes, it's genetics, you know. Yeah.
All right, so take us through the journey. You say you were doing like the college tour, and then how did like it go from there to like you really started doing your thing?
Yeah, so the college, okay, so when I was in college, I was in an acting group called Too Deep Entertainment, and that group really pushed me to the limit. When I tell you, first of all, I still love them. To this day, I know all the people. It was like five other actors in the group. And then we had a director and then other managers on the side to help us with business and stuff like that. Shout out to them. But like pretty much it was so hard to be in a group with people who were so talented. And I was so new. I was only 18. So I would like be on stage and these people were like, yeah, so hype and so ready. And they were like, I'm this person, I'm that person, and we about to, And I was over there like, yeah, so we're ready to start the show. Give me a high five, guys. Like, I would be so shy. And they would make fun of me after the show. They'd be like, who am I? Like, I would feel so bad. I would like cry in the corner. I felt like, nah, I gotta get better at this. Like, this is not gonna be my life. I was terrified of being on stage, like terrified, but they knew I was good. That's why I was accepted to the show. I was a great writer. I did spoken words. So I would always do their spoken word segments. I could cry on cue. So I always played that person that cried on cue. I always played that wacky, goofy nerd. Like I was able to play characters. But once you put me on stage and I was just supposed to talk to the audience, I would like almost froze. So I eventually, I was with them for like 3 years. And that was like a master's school for me. Like I got so good. I was jumping in the audiences, looking at people's faces and like making them laugh. I started wearing costumes. I became so comfortable to where it just felt like the stage was my home. And after that, I started auditioning. I went back to, this was in Albany, upstate New York. Then I went back to New York City and I started auditioning and people were like, yo, you're so comfortable. Like you seem like the stage is your home. And I'm like, that I had to work for that. It wasn't easy. I remember I went to this comedy show, you know, the Queens of Comedy.
Mm-hmm.
they had me host and open up for them. It was like, it was actually people who are famous now, but I would like go on stage and like they played music. I think at that time they played like uh-oh, and I just went on stage or some Crazy in Love, and I was just like doing some crazy shit like this, and I was just like making faces, and I was like, you know, wilding out, and I would become like the comic relief or openers or host for like different shows here and there. I was at the Egg, the Palace Theater. I was there with like Kevin Hart. There was one time it was Eddie Griffin, but it was just like so many different little things that I did here and there that made me realize, okay, I could actually do this, you know, like I can actually make it happen. When I was in that group, this is a funny story. I'm actually I can't call people out like that, but there was a famous comedian who we all hung out with during the show. Like he opened up, or not opened up, he was the main event, and we hung out with him after. And then when we were hanging out with him, he was hilarious. Me and him started talking, and then he didn't know that my director was introducing me as an actor. He thought the director was introducing me as the woman that they got to sleep with him. So, mind you, he had a wife and kids. So he was like, man, I'm so happy that they got someone who was also intelligent, you know, like you just, you know, he was saying like, you're beautiful, you're intelligent. You know, I'm excited for this night. And I'm like, yeah, I'm excited for this night too. Like,
So he was married, but still get it in.
Like, yo, no, like he was happy that cause he actually really liked me. So he was happy. I think he used to like just models maybe, and maybe they just like know their job and they do, and then they do what they got to do. But he looked like the conversation that we was having. So it was just interesting. But he's a big famous comedian. I'm not going to say his name, but I'll tell you after, Daryl.
That's why, Daryl, you telling me after.
True. But no, like it's just so funny how, you know, in that's a fast life. Like people come and they travel and they tour and they got wives and kids at home, but you know, I guess they do what they gotta do. So eventually the lady who was for him came, and he looked at him, he was like, oh, I guess this will do.
Yo, I don't even think you gotta tell me who it is. Matter of fact, were we done? And you, and before you even say it, yo, I'm going to say it, and just tell me if I'm right or wrong. But
I'm going to take a guess.
Oh my god!
Yeah, I definitely want to take a guess when we're done. Because out of the people that I've heard, maybe it could be one of them, but maybe not.
Right. No, it was hilarious. It was hilarious. But yeah, no, like I've been to a lot of shows with them. I wrote a lot of shows with them. I wrote my own stage play. It was at this really nice theater. It was called African American. It's a long story, but long story short, I feel like they've given me like the groundwork and the foundation for building being an actress and a creator and just a full-blown director, producer, writer. That's what got me the foundation. And then I almost graduated, I would say, to an international company. So I got with this company called Catharsis Productions. And they only auditioned, like, they auditioned a whole lot of people. It was like hundreds of people that they auditioned in like four different cities. So they auditioned people in Baltimore, Atlanta, New York, Chicago. And they picked only four people that round. So I was one of the four people that they picked. And it was like, I had no idea I was going to get picked. I kind of was just like, this is almost practice for when I get, you know, like practice for like just auditions in general. Cause it was such a big opportunity that mm-hmm. I didn't think to myself, I'm going to get this. I thought to myself, I'm going to do my best. You had to like read a book for that audition. You had to like, you know, do some improv. You had to do a monologue. You had to do so much. And I just thought to myself, I kept going round after round. And what happened was right before that audition, I got accepted to an Ivy League school for my master's in acting. It was Columbia University. And I always wanted to go to Ivy League school, and they only accepted 18 people out of the hundreds of people that applied. And I kept going to the next round and the next round and the next round. And I thought to myself, like, okay, I don't know if I'm going to make it, but if I make it, it's going to be the biggest thing in my life. I made it at Columbia, and they said it was going to be like $150,000 that I'll have to pay out of pocket. They was gonna give me funding I was like, do y'all have any money to give me? They was like, we got $5,000 on you. I was like, five.
What's that, like a book?
Right. And I told them I couldn't do it. Then they was like, okay, we can give you like, you know, another $5,000, and then you could do work study. So that's $15,000. I was like, what's 14? Child, I'm going to have to take out $135,000 in loans. So I said, I can't do that because I felt like that would also fall on my parents. You know what I mean? Like, if I can't, you know, they have to co-sign it. So I was like, you know
what? Somebody got to sell the house for your ass to go to school.
Right. So I was like, I don't know about that. And also, I was doing shows at that time with people who graduated from Harvard and Yale at acting schools, like 5 years, 6 years out. And we was making like a little bit of money a show. And I'm like, yo, like, this is not guaranteed. You really got to go to acting programs because you are passionate about it and you want to work at your craft, not because you feel like, you know, you're going to make it and be famous. So yeah. I had turned them down. And I thought to myself, I cannot believe I turned down an Ivy League school. But at the same time, my spirit told me to turn them down. And also, I didn't want to go back to school. I felt like I just wanted to audition and get in it just to prove that I could be an Ivy, like that I could get into an Ivy school. I don't know why I did that. Yeah. That's not the smartest thing to do, but I think we need to initially believe that we could literally accomplish anything. It'll save a lot of time if you just believe in yourself as opposed to having to get the validation from outside of yourself to believe in yourself. You know what I mean? So I turned down the school. They picked another Black chick. And she actually reached out to me and said, thank you, because I was on the wait list and this is my biggest dream. So she thanked me for like not going to the school. And I was like, oh, that's what's up. And then I thought to myself, how am I going to make it? After I said no to them, that was when I got that huge opportunity to work at that international company where they flew me out to different countries and states and in United States to perform for like hundreds and hundreds of people. And I ended up being there for like three, almost 4 years. And that was another stepping stone to where that was beyond what my wildest dreams. I was in like fancy hotels. We were traveling to all these different places. I got to really, it was a dream life. You know, I got to just like, it felt free. It felt free. I felt like I was doing my God's work. It was a comedy show. So it was like fun. The actual CEOs of the company were real comedians who like performed, and they were like doctorate students or doctors, and they were doctorate students. So the show was really smart, but it was funny as hell. And that was a dream come true. I felt like I made it. You know what I mean? Like, I was like,
are there any wild road stories?
Wild road stories. Oh my God.
Anything, okay. Anything funny, fun?
Dang, that I could mention.
Well, first, I like what you said, because it was written like that was your path.
Yeah. There are some. Oh, you know what? Real quick, I want to say this. One of my ex mentors. I'm still cool with him, but when he told me he went to a fancy school, he said, "Sakina, you're gonna regret not going to this Ivy League school." He was like, "This is the worst decision." Like he was like saying something like, "You're gonna feel like really dumb after this." Like. He was saying all this types of stuff. And I'm like, yo, my spirit is telling me what it's telling me. Like, I can't listen to outside sources. I just want to let people know, like, if your spirit is telling you something, you can't go with logic. You got to go with God, because God is always going to have something bigger and better for you. Because after I chose that career, I had my own apartment. I had all the things that I didn't think I was going to have at like 22. And I had people who just graduated. I knew friends who just graduated from like fancy colleges like NYU. And they said, how am I like, you know, waiting tables and shit. And you over here traveling the world. And I graduated from a master's program and you doing your thing.
We can't go to the road stories now. You segued us.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Talk about waiting tables and shit.
I'm sorry.
That's waiting tables and shit. So that's why the fuck I'm still waiting tables?
That's actually how I made the song, because people was telling me that. It was like, I'm still waiting tables and shit. I was like, I gotta make a fucking song about waiting tables. No, okay. Okay, first of all, I don't think I do have road stories. I'm gonna tell you one that's funny. My hair is obviously natural. There was one time where I was in Japan, and there was this Japanese lady. She came up to me, and she was like, oh, your hair. And I was like, oh, yeah, this is my hair. And she had a translator tell me, her translator said, she wants to know how she can get her hair like your hair. And I said, oh, well, I said, oh no, this is my hair. Like, it grows out of my head. Like, she can't, like, you know, she can't really do that. And then the lady was looking at her like, what is she saying? Her translator was trying to explain to her that I can't, that she can't grow that hair. And so her translator was still trying to explain to her. She was like, huh? And I was like, I was trying to explain to her, like, you can't do this. And she's like, oh, hi. Okay. And then she, like, tried to reach to touch it. And I was like, oh, well, you know, don't touch my hair. But I said, maybe she could do a perm. But, yeah, no, it's just, like, culturally, I started to see different cultures. I started to, like, explore the world. Mm-hmm. I was starting to understand, like, that, okay, America is just one country. The world is bigger than this. And, yeah, like, even when I went to New Orleans, like, people were just walking naked, like, on the strip.
New Orleans, wow.
Like, the strip clubs was just, like, wow. Like, dudes, I was in a strip club. Okay, first of all, I wasn't in a strip club. I was in a regular bar. And I said strip club because I ain't never seen a bar where people were just walking around naked. But dudes had the freaking thongs on, and they was just, like, freaking crotch in your face. And I was like, oh, this is what we're doing. Okay, all right. Nope. I don't got any singles, but
That's crazy.
I go to the ATM. Oh, okay. You want to follow me to the ATM? Okay, all right. But
do you believe what you said about you got to go other places to expand your mind? Because
right,
my mom told me to do that because I'm not going to say why, but I had a chance to go to Australia or whatever, and I told my mom, I was like, Mom, I live in New York. What do I want to go there for? It's like, no, you have to go there because it's going to open your mind. You're going to see things and you're going to realize, like, you know, there's a lot more to the world than just, you know, us. I was like, yeah, whatever. Cool. So I went. I was there for like 3 months and it just blew my mind. Like, I was like, oh, so people are like this and people are like that. Like, the biggest thing I can say is, like, I was talking to this person and then she was like, well, like, we were describing something. And I was like, you know, I was like, that white dude. And she's like, why do you, like, associate people with color? I was like, what do you mean? And she's like, why didn't you just say, like, the guy with the shirt like this or the hat like this or brown hair? I was like, I don't know, that's what we do, white, black, Spanish, whatever. And she said, yeah, we don't do that. And I was like,
yeah.
I was like, oh,
yep,
it's different.
Yep. They see their culture as what unites them. Like, when I went to London, this is when I was in study abroad. This is when I wasn't acting, but I was studying abroad. And there was, like, a whole bunch of, there was more interracial couples than I saw, like, same race couples. Mm-hmm. It's because they all had the same accent and everything. Their schooling systems, they didn't pay for college. Like, their college, I think they paid for, like, young, when they were in, like, elementary school and, like, primary school, but college for them is free.
Mm-hmm.
And so their college classes are like master's courses. Like, when they go to school for math, like, we have general education classes where we have to do certain things. They don't have to do general education. All their classes is like a mathematician writing or a mathematician doing this or a mathematician. Everything is math or everything's engineering or is whatever.
They're big on trade schools. They're big on.
Yeah, it's almost like a master's, really. And so when I would know certain things, they'd be like, gen eds. What is a gen eds? And I'm like, general education. Like, you don't got gen ed classes. Like, yeah. And it's interesting because they call things what it is. Like, they drive in the driveway, they park in the parkway, but we do everything opposite. Like, they even said, they made fun of me. They was like, why do you guys call it soccer? It's like, what's soccer? You put your foot to a ball. It's called football, isn't it? Like, they were just like, you know,
or a car park,
right? Exactly.
You know, my people in South Brixton, there's a ton of rooks down there. I think they would appreciate your accent. All right,
yeah, what's your
Brixton? And when I went to Brixton, it's like the Brooklyn of like Britain. I was like, Brixton.
As soon as she did, the first thing I thought about was Top Boy,
yo. Oh my God, I gotta go back there. But yeah, no, Top Boy reminds me of that. It's like, it's nostalgic.
Did you finish it?
I was there for like 3 months.
Did you finish it, the season?
No, I'm not, my boyfriend watches that joint. I tried to watch it.
It's crazy.
It's a lot for me. Like, I can't.
Yeah.
I can't do all of that. I'm more of like I like drama shows. I like comedic shows. The freaking crime all that. I can't. It's a lot. The drug lords and the killers and the it's my nerves. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah. What's
for me to watch something like that now though? Because I've seen a few episodes and it's cool. It's all right. You know, mm-hmm. I see why people like it. But yeah. Growing up the way we did, like we had The Wire, we had all these shows early on. I feel like I've seen it all already. So mm-hmm. when you put out a show like that, it really got to take a hold of me for me to be a regular watcher. Like I'll watch it and say, yo, this shit is cool. But to hold me and have me like want to see every season, yeah, it's not going to be that easy anymore. I feel yeah. like
you know what show is addictive that I actually didn't know about until like a couple years ago, but this show came out years ago. Like I want to say like in the early 2000s. Lost. You seen Lost?
Yes, early 2000s. No, I stopped watching after they kick off my girl.
I can't watch shows that I just don't get the concept. Like Lost, it just continues to be people going to this damn island and they can't get off. I just don't understand. Like The Walking Dead. How do you not get away from a slow-ass zombie?
That show, it wasn't a zombie. That show, it's so many layers. It's so deep. If you watch it again as an adult, because I think maybe you was watching it when like you wasn't really on that level. But now when you know like conspiracy theories and you understand the government system, like, when you understand stuff now as an adult, I think it means so much more.
How many seasons?
Damn, that joint is like... Damn, I know it's like 100 and something episodes. Like,
it's not... Yo, like... I'm into all the conspiracy theory shit since I was a kid, but I have personal biases. Michelle Rodriguez is an original cast member of Lost.
Oh yeah,
yeah. Right.
They said they had beef with her, or she was whatever on the show. And I hear the next season she ain't on the show. I said, "Fuck y'all." There it is.
They had beef. I didn't know they had beef. I thought they just killed her off, and she had other stuff to do.
Nope, she didn't. She had problems with on the show or whatever, and. Production didn't like her or whatever. She had an attitude. Cool. I've been watching Michelle Rodriguez since Girl Fight. That's day one. I'm day one with y'all. I'm day one with Michelle. I'm done with Lost. Not really.
I feel you. I feel you. But you don't know what happened behind the scenes. You don't know who started what.
Exactly.
Hey.
Because you should know.
Sakina, if you on a show and they say they got a problem with you for whatever reason you off the show, I'm with my homies right or wrong.
I mean, I believe that too, but I was gonna say you should know by being on set that sometimes you meet people that you thought were gonna be cool as fuck. And then you learn like, wow, they let me down. Like I did not know.
I learned that on the set early. I think we did Lime Life. Mm. And matter of fact, I'm not mad. We did Lime Life and young Caden Culkin, McCully's little brother, he was really boxed in, like his personality wise.
Mm-hmm.
And I was younger in my mind, not thinking, because Alec Baldwin's nephew's on the show, and he's like when they cut the camera, he's still wilding.
Mm.
You know, so everybody's still laughing and shit. And I did SVU with Robin Williams. Robin Williams, you know, God rest his soul, he was a professional through and through. He inspired my heart. The dude's going through what he's going through, and he comes onto the set, and they're like, "Yo, leave him alone." And he comes on, and we're all laughing. He's like, "Yo, why is everybody so serious?" And you know, McCully's little brother Caden, I'm sitting here, I'm like, "Yo, why is he like this?" And I thought it was him, but you know, all the stuff he got going on in his world and everything, you just never know how people are going to behave when you actually meet them.
That's so
there's truth to that, but.
How many brothers?
Like,
How many brothers does McCully have? One.
Yeah, I think
no, there's one.
Or his little sister.
Okay. Yeah. So you're talking about the dude that's on Succession?
Yup.
That show's fire though.
Yeah.
Filmed where I was working.
I didn't like the ending, but that show's fire.
One of the greatest shows HBO has ever come up with.
I mean, it was. All right, let's get back to you though. So when did you hit something that when did you do a project that, I mean, we all strive for more. So I'm not going to say you was like, okay, cool, I made it. But you were kind of like, okay, cool, I'm in a good place. Like, we good now.
I feel like I don't think I've reached that point yet where I feel like I'm good now. Like, it's never really that point. Like, I would say maybe one of the biggest projects I've done that I feel like, okay, like, they've actually paid me thousands of dollars. It wasn't just, like, a couple hundred dollars here and there. Even that job that I had where I traveled over the world, it was, like, the most money I've ever made at that time. But as I got older, it was like, okay, when is there going to be, like, another thing that I'm getting paid thousands of dollars? And that was something that, where I was working for a company. But with my own work, where I wrote it, directed it, produced it, starred in it, was He Wants to Know My Number. I made that, like, it was a spoken word piece that I turned into a film. And Showtime reached out to me and was like, we saw your film. Can we license your film?
Right.
And that was like, I'm like, they're about to pay me thousands of dollars for my film, like, that I did myself. Like, it blew my mind. It blew my mind. And I'm the type of person where I'm very spiritual. I do the manifestation thing. And I did pray and, like, manifest on being on a major television network, you know, and I didn't put which one. I just put, I want to be on a major television network. And in my mind, I'm thinking, okay, this is probably going to happen like another 5-10 years from now. The fact that it happened like almost weeks after I did that manifestation and then they found me, I was like, yo, like, this is real. I'm about to do this every day.
Real powerful energy. Yo, Chance, you already said, right? It was called He Wants to Know My Number. Mm-hmm. You know what you're talking about? Mm-hmm. Just talking about bodies.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Body count.
Play your words. It was beautiful. It was beautiful.
Thank you. That piece. So I didn't even know that that piece was going to receive the level of, like, you know, reception that it had, because, like, that was just a spoken word piece that I did years ago, where I was performing actually with the company that I first initially started with. I wrote it then, years and years ago, and then people still wanted me to perform it years later. Like, I had a one woman show that was a part of the one woman show. It was like me doing different characters. That was one of the characters, and I did that in, like, New York City in my, like, you know, after I left Albany, right? And so after that, I had people, like, ask me to perform it at, like, book signing events, hip hop, or, you know, album release parties. Freaking some professor at Columbia asked me to perform it at his doctoral thesis class. Like, I just had people paying me for random things to perform just that one piece. And I'm like, dang, people keep asking me if I have it taped. And I was like, well, I don't want to give myself, like, I don't want to give them, like, a crappy video of me just on camera saying the spoken word piece. I want something to be creative. So that's what made me create a nice film for it. And that's why I did it. And then people are like, oh, you should go into film festivals with this. Film festivals will eat this up. So I put in a bunch of film festivals. And I was like, yeah, I guess I should do that.
Was that hard for you to take it from like a shorter film to, like, stretch it?
It was still a short film. Like, it's still a short film.
No, so, I mean, like, because it was a spoken word piece, right?
Yeah.
But you had to stretch it out to be longer, yeah,
right? Well, it's still the same amount of time, okay. But I show myself on film, like, in different places. So I wanted to look like it was, like, I'm every woman. Like, every woman deals with this. So I was in a shower. I was in a cafe. I was in a car with my man talking. But the whole time, I'm breaking the fourth wall, and I'm speaking to the man that asked me what's my number, you know? And it's... Anytime I performed it, it was always powerful for both men and women. People would come to me after the show and say, oh my God, I'm so glad you said that, because, you know, I had this conversation so many times. And I found it interesting that so many people had this conversation in their lives, but I have not seen that type of, you know, like, script on screen where people broke that down into why that shouldn't even be a conversation, you know? But it gets deep, and I feel like I like to make something deep feel lighthearted and, you know, palatable. So I think that's what it did. Okay. Yeah.
People can see this now or not?
Yeah. You can either see it on Showtime. So it was exclusive to Showtime for a year, but that year's up now. They still have it. They'll have it for the next 8 years. But now I still have it on my page now. So you can see it on my Instagram under, like, my bio, or my website, or you can see it on Showtime. If you have Showtime, just look up He Wants to Know My Number, or look up Sakina Iman.
You guys would check it out, because I will after this. because I like stuff, because I'm a creative person. So I like stuff, like, it sounds like when you're describing it, I get it, because when I do things, I try to be as creative as possible. So, like, I can see, like, oh, shit, that's mad creative. Like, that's got to be dope. So,
yeah. And shout out to Joe Lombroso of Brilliant Champions, him and his wife, because they have a dope company called Brilliant Champions, and they help independent artists produce their films.
Yeah. Word, shout out to them, then. We need more independent artists. Control your shit.
Say it again.
We need more independent artists. Control, you know, your creative expression.
Exactly. Film is very expensive, and people don't realize that. Like, film is a low budget film in Hollywood is $2.5 million. That's considered low budget. Like, $2.5 million. So, and then, like, literally anything that's $25,000, $100,000, that's considered no budget. Like, that's considered like a real bootleg booty film at $100,000. So, anything less than that, you already know that's just kind of looked at as like, yo, you talented for making this work, you know? So almost all my films I've made only like on like a $7,000, $10,000 budget, and all my money. And I made it work. I made it stretch. I had to like have favors done, because there were some people where like they were collaborating with me, the actors in my films. I paid some of them that had more background roles. I was like, listen, there's like no budget for the film, so you either on it or you're not. But they're so supportive that they were on it, and they were like, oh, of course it's you, like I'm gonna do it. And it's also something that they can use for their reels, so it's like a exchange where they get free, you know, videos and promo, and then I get a film. But yeah, film is so expensive. It's one of those things where being an artist is an expensive sport, as y'all already know. Being an entrepreneur is an expensive sport. So
I got a 2-part question to that.
Yeah.
Obviously we're all independent. When did you start putting your own cash in? And it doesn't have to be long, because I'm trying to get to the next question about it. Like,
yeah.
Like, what year did you start that?
Like around like 2016.
Okay, that's a pretty good question, I'm going to say. Because if you would have said like 2 years ago, it wouldn't make sense. All right, so 2016 to now, do you feel it's a little easier with, I mean, obviously we're having problems with streaming, but do you feel like with the way the internet now is and with streaming, do you feel like it's a lot easier to like get that money back? Or do you feel like it's still a challenge?
Nah, it's definitely still. It's like the more you build, the more people want to help and support and like fund you, but I'm just now, like, I've never done a GoFundMe. I think at one point I tried to do one, and it lasted for like a week before I was like, this shit taking too long. Like, I'm the type of person, I'm impatient. Like, if I can't do things right now, I'm going to like, you know, and I think that I was like, you know what, F it. That's what made me want to do it with my own money, because I'm like, I can sit here and ask for money, but I'm not going to get $18,000 or $20,000 today.
Yeah.
You know? So, yeah. So that's what made me really want to do it, was that I was like, I want to create this now. Like, it needs to be created now. I think it's still difficult because, you know, the economy or whatever. But I think at this point in my career, it might be a little easier for people to say, oh, I'll help her. You know, let's say there's a room full of 50 people who all have some cash. Like, if I ask each person for $300 to support me, that's right there. That's like, what, $15,000, you know what I mean? So, and if it's 60 people, that's $18,000. So it's like, you know, you could just really, you could come up with a lot of money real quick if you are strategic about it and you get the right sponsors and stuff. And if you have the proper promotional materials and things to back up, that you can create something powerful. So I think that now I'm more confident that I can actually do a GoFundMe and make it happen quicker than back then, when I didn't really have much, you know?
And your name would probably be bigger now too, right?
Right, right. Like, you could look me up on legit stuff and they'd be like, okay, I see she's doing something, you know?
We tried to Kickstarter one time for it, because we have like we created this comic universe.
Mm-hmm.
So nice. A little shit called Geeked Out.
Nice.
Like, brand new superheroes, villains, like all different kind of, see, I tell you, I'm bad with words, like ethnicities, you know what I mean? I gotta sound it out. But I tried to Kickstarter or whatever, and then it just, it was taking too long, it wasn't working. So it was like, we just have to put it on pause right now. But we're trying to make it like an animation, like, you know, for like the YouTube, and then eventually, you know, put on Amazon and stuff like that. But
right.
It does get frustrating. Really creative-ass people who are impatient, but creative people should be impatient. Because if you wait long enough, man, like that, People say I'm good with words,
mm-hmm.
but I tell them I live in the moment. So whatever you get from me, I'm holding on to that moment until it's finished. And then you get that. So it's as authentic and as real as possible. If I wait and prolong it, now it's watered down, and now that moment is lost, and the creativity is not what it could have been.
Exactly.
Rook knows if I come up with an idea, like we'll talk, like right now, we're like, hey, so we should do this, whatever. And like 10 minutes, I done sent him mad things already, what I did about it, and like how we gonna go. Like I got animations, I got pictures, I got logos.
Right. It's like, because we're like a reservoir of creativity. Like we can't just stop the river.
I can't hold it.
Yeah, we can't. It's literally pouring out of us. So I think, you know, yeah, y'all already know, y'all creatives as well, y'all are artists as well. Like it's something that we try to hone, we try to make it more business. And I think that's one struggle that a lot of artists have, is to like try to balance out the creativity with the business side. That's something that always, I feel like it's always going to be something that we have to like work at balancing and working at being diligent about. Because you can't always, huh?
I'm not good with being the business side, because I don't like people like that. So, it's very hard to hold my real emotions in.
Right.
That's when I feel like, you know, you're doing me dirty.
Right. Now you can't always be inspired. Like when you're writing something, like sometimes you just got to get it done and do it when it needs to be done. Because if I waited until I was inspired, or if I waited until, you know, I got back the inspiration from when it was inspiration, I wouldn't have gotten a lot of things done. So, yeah, like you just gotta, like, I have a video from back in the day when I used to travel and stuff and do more music. I used to be more music heavy, and I won this like artist competition. It was like a competition for artists to perform their original music. And I was coming from like work at the time. I was running on like 2 hours of sleep. I had just come from an 8-hour shift, and I was like, I gotta be in this competition. Like, so I was like, I didn't think I was gonna win. I was gonna go straight home. I was gonna be like, listen, man, I can't do this. But I never canceled the show ever. And I never plan on canceling the show. I always tell myself, like, if I say I'm gonna do something, just do it. So I decided, you know what, I'm gonna just do it. And I won the show, and they flew me out to Atlanta to be in the A3C Fest and like open up for like these nice artists. And it was dope. I got to meet like really dope. I got to meet Coda the Friend and a bunch of other people. It was cool. Like, I think that I say that to say, like, you really got to F your feelings. Like, just say whatever I'm feeling right now. It don't matter. I'm going to do it whether I'm horrible at it or not. And it's going to teach you a lesson to like prepare better and to not wait till the last minute and not procrastinate. But it's always going to build you and make you stronger if you just push past those feelings that you have in that current moment.
Yeah, the world would teach you that. I feel that. Because, you know, wherever you're working, like job life will teach you that. But, you know, job life is, for a lot of people, is just work. So, mm-hmm. you know, we've all been in the world of art, and modeling taught me that, you know, and I took that into my job life. My photographer saw me one day, man, my mom got on my nerves. She just had one job, bro. I just get this hair right, this hair that everybody's always talking about, yo, just get it right. And she just started like, she, you know, typical Jamaican shit. She picked this little argument with me, and I'm like, right before I got to go do this shoot, like I got a big company to meet after that. And I went there, and he's like, yo, you just don't have it. All right. You're wearing whatever it is that happened earlier. You're wearing it, and you can't wear it. All right. You can't wear your fatigue. You can't wear your problems. All right. None of that shit. Whatever it is, you leave it at the threshold of where you were going. And after that, he never saw me that way again. I went to work. No one at work saw me like that. I come home. Whatever's at work, that shit don't come with me. I leave everything in its place, and put your face on, put your whatever you need to wear, put that shit on when you're going to that next place that you're going.
You know, it's interesting. I love that you say that, because I literally, so I that company that I used to travel with, they used to have directors fly out to see our performance and what we're doing, right? And what happened was, I was on stage, and this was the first time that like she was like, Sakina, something was off about you today. And I did feel off, and I didn't understand why I felt off. And usually I have all this energy, and I was like, maybe it's because, you know, it was a red eye, like we in California, like I had to, there's a 6-hour flight. But that never really mattered before. Like I always was able to like turn it on, and I was taught to turn it on, because I learned that I can't just be like, even if I was only on 2 hours sleep. I already learned like to just turn it on. But that was the first time that I was in front of an audience where it was all white males. And I've never been in front of, like, all my audiences before have been like multicultural. I always saw somebody in the audience that I could connect with and felt like, okay, you know what? Let's like I'm me now. I'm me again. I see myself. I feel comfortable. I didn't realize that that was a thing. So it was like all white men. And it just something like shocked me or something made me feel like almost smaller or like I wasn't going to be listened to or respected. I felt intimidated and I was younger and I was just, so when I told her that, she was like, oh my God, she was like, wow, I never thought about that. And she was a white woman. So I had to like feel comfortable telling her that. And then we had a meeting with like the CEOs of the company and the business. And he was like, Sakina, he's like, we hired Brooklyn Sakina. We love Brooklyn Sakina. Like I had to, I told him that I turned on my interview Sakina and that looks weird on stage. Cause I'm, you can't be, in, you can't be like toned down, like put on your freaking,
it's hard,
you know
to,
what I'm saying? Like,
it's hard to learn.
You know what I'm talking about.
It's hard to learn.
Code switching, the code switching. I had to code switch on stage. That wasn't cute. I had to be myself on stage. And so they made me feel more comfortable to know like, okay, they hired me cause like I know how to switch it up.
Sometimes it's hard as an artist to know that though, especially like when you're first coming up, because all you're thinking about is I don't want to mess up. Like I really want this, like I need this, like what if I do this? Like is it gonna X this out? So it's kind of hard. It takes us a while to learn, like, you know what? They fucking with me because it's me. That's what they want me. So I have to be. And sometimes it takes a while to learn that.
But energy is important. Yo, people don't think like that energy is a real thing, but What I would say to you know, you in that moment or anyone, because that's an environment that we're totally not used to. If we're talking about performing, like that's the time. Next time you're like, yo, look, I'm gonna take this room, and I'm gonna make them remember me. I'm gonna own this room. This shit is mine.
Yeah.
At the same time, too, though, that energy initially, you're like, yo, I've never had this room before. So that energy too is like, yo, who am I getting that instant fire with? Nobody. It's dead air in between us, and there's no friction whatsoever. So it's a weird thing, but it's cool to go through that shit.
Yeah, no. Once I realized that, I started to push myself to really get comfortable and just be like, yo, F it. Like we all human at the end of the day. And once I became that. People, Matt, grown, big ass G.I. Joe looking white men, like this giant, came up to me, like will come up to me and they'll be like, wow, you changed my life. Like, honestly, like I didn't realize this and that. And like, just this whole show, like when you broke down this, I'm like looking at like this grown big ass dude. But it's like, I thought that actually grew, that made me a better human because that made me see people. Like, I was like, oh, we all just children. Like we all just little soft teddy bears on the inside. Like, we all just want a hug, you know? To see somebody who looks the opposite of me. I'm this small chocolate woman, and this is, like, ginormous white dude. But, like, no, to experience that, it definitely helped me with my writing and just being a human in general. In general, being an artist and an actress, it really does help you to be a better person.
Yeah. I mean, it also speaks to what you do too, that it made someone feel that way. You know what I mean?
Thank you. Yeah. And y'all should check out Running Star also. That's one of my latest films.
I'm checking all the shit out. All the shit out.
Oh, you seen it? You seen it?
I'm going to check it out. I don't know. I haven't seen it much.
Yo. And I was following all the promos for that.
Okay. Oh, right. You know what it was? I promoted and then it came out in film festivals, but I never like said, hey, I'm premiering it to the world. I've never done that, but I just decided, let me just put it up. So it's up on Vimeo. Like it's like, you can find it on my website, but I didn't say to everybody, oh, go and see Running Star. I showed it to like a select few people because that film is real personal to me. That's the longest film I've done. Cause I only do shorts. It's still a short, but it's like my longest short. It's 15 minutes. But like, that film, people at Mad Festivals was like, yo, this film is deep as fuck. And I edited that whole shit myself.
Yeah, I'm definitely checking everything out because I usually stay like in my own little bubble. So the first time like I seen you was, I think you had like the reel, whatever. And it's because I put it the collaborator thing, so I ended up on Rook's page, which makes sense, and you liked it. So then I looked at your page, and then I was like, yo, Rook. I was like, who's this? And then he told me, I was like, bro. I was like, why we don't want to have her on the joint? He's like, all right, let's make that work. I said, I bet. So, yeah, like, I'm definitely, like, interested in checking all your shit out. Like, sounds
nice. Thank you.
Sounds good.
I'm going to tell you the truth, bro. She's Carmen Sandiego, son. I had to chase her around the world to get an interview. It's not like I didn't bring this up last week. I brought this up eons ago when we was chancing D-Rip podcast.
Wow, that's a long time ago.
He definitely did a long time ago. I just didn't have any like downtime. I since then made
you know it. What? It's the universe. That's why, because it wasn't ready.
Yeah, exactly. That's a fact.
It wasn't written there because the D-Rook podcast, the D-Rook podcast was a long time ago. That was like the first iteration of what we got going on. I was just telling someone this at gymnastics with my girls because he does YouTube too. And I was telling him, I was like, I think when we started it, it was cool. Then we also like a wrestling joint too. I said, that's cool. I said, but I think every single bit of piece of YouTube and podcast and stuff that I did and learned, I think it's going to make this podcast that much better because we have experience and already know like how to navigate through it. So
right.
It was written out. Like it probably would have been a fire interview back then too, but it probably wouldn't have been what it is now.
Exactly. No, I feel that. Everything happens in the right timing, divine timing.
But I'm gonna try to get some quick questions out because it's already been like an hour and
my bad.
And no, that's good.
You're bad. We stole you.
No, that's a good thing because like it just flew so quick.
And right.
I'm like, damn, it's already been an hour or 20.
I feel like we just started.
Like I feel like it's just regular conversation. But when it comes to the singing, the writing, directing, the acting, are there certain people that you were inspired by or kind of take from? Or is it kind of like whatever?
Definitely for writing, Jordan Peele.
I don't know why I said my name when you were talking earlier, but cool. That's cool. I'm glad.
Yeah. Because even Running Star is kind of like an homage to Get Out and a couple of other. It's like an amalgamation of like Goldilocks and the Three Bears, 12 Years a Slave, and Get Out.
I've never seen those movies though.
Oh, okay, yeah. What? So, I mean, well, Goldilocks and Three Bears, you know what that's about.
Yeah. I was talking about like Jordan Peele stuff, like the Get Out. I still haven't seen it yet, but go ahead. My bad.
Yeah, no, you definitely got to see that. So overall, I go with depth, and so shows like Dawson's Creek. And I know that's like a whole drama show, but the writing, woof, when I tell you, powerful. Anything existential, like The Butterfly Effect.
I love that movie. Yeah.
Yes. Like something about when people go in the minds and the psyche of a human and almost dig deep to the point where they're like regretting or like those huge human emotions, like loss and regret and trauma. That really speaks to my spirit because I'm like, yo, like it's something that connects us all. It's something that helps us to empathize with one another. So I feel like a lot of my writing comes from real life situations. That's what really inspires me is seeing people's pain and wanting to empathize.
Ooh, another pain, Rook. Another pain. Throw out my music came from pain.
Right. So that's what inspires me. Music, Music Soul Child, Usher, a lot of R&B, old school, yeah, India Irie, who else? It's me and Dow love Tori Kelly.
I do too.
But like my music doesn't sound like hers, but she just inspires me as an artist in general, like as an independent artist. And she's mad, like OD talented. But overall, anybody that's independent inspires me, entrepreneurs inspire me. What's his name? Gary V, you know Gary V?
Oh, I got him subscribed to the channel. Yeah.
I actually met him and I didn't even know that he was behind me. He's like, oh, Sakina, it's nice to meet you. I turned around, I said, that motherfucking Gary V is just next to me. Sakina, nice to meet you. He put his hand on my shoulder. He's like, Sakina, like, what? Right. Like,
no, nice to meet me.
Right. I had to play it real cool. I had to play it smooth.
Oh, I was yeah, like, of course it is.
Nice to meet you too.
I listen to this podcast like every night, like just to get more ideas, of what we're doing, like how to see if I'm missing something. So yeah, I like your nice.
Yeah, nah, him and his wife, fire. Yeah, so overall, I'm just inspired by life, multiple things. It's a never-ending pool, but a lot of it is
very,
also...
I'm very intrigued to see
what you're saying. Even Spike Lee inspired me. Like,
You ever seen Memento?
Memento. Yeah. I feel like I have.
Christopher Nolan, it's real...
I was just going to say movies like Inception. Yo, Christopher Nolan is on another level.
He did it. You should watch it, Memento.
Okay,
you can't watch it once. So
that's what I wanted for people to when they watch Running Star. People was like, I got to see that like 12 times because I love stuff that gets into your mind and just makes like almost mind fucks you. Like that's my goal. I want people to think deep and hard pause about really what it is that they're watching.
I don't think you got to pause.
Or none of us said it, son, and Cameron ain't here.
Yeah. I think you're okay with it. But Memento, you should check that out. What about this movie Sliding Doors?
Oh dang, I don't think I seen that.
See who directed.
You seen AI? Have you seen AI? Like the old stuck up. Yo, that movie AI with the little kid who is the robot and they adopt a robot kid. That is deep.
No, that shit fucked me up because I didn't see the kid as a robot like initially.
Right. Oh, that joint is deep.
Memento, I can't really tell you what it's about because it's just crazy. You gotta check it out. The Sliding Doors is easy to describe. It's basically it shows her life two different ways. One is she would have missed the train, or two, if she would have caught the train like she did.
I love shit like that. I was gonna write something like that because I love when people do stuff like that. I love it. When I see movies like that, I'm like, ooh, that's good. So
I gave you two jewels right there.
That's a classic fork in the road tale. Classic fork meaning there's only two prongs on the fork, all
right? Right. But then there's like other prongs on each fork, and then it's just a never ending. That's how I feel life is in general. But that's, I love stuff like that. Oh my God.
I feel like at some point we'll probably have to do a part two because I feel like we didn't even get halfway through anything. But... But I know, like I said,
part two, yeah, we gotta do part two.
My sister's a bit so long. I'm gonna let you plug anything you want to plug or tell us anything you want to tell, and then I'm gonna give you our rapid four questions, and then you know, we're gonna say deuces.
Okay, cool. So, please check out Hood Meditations, the Manifest in a Lick. That's actually coming out October 27th, but by the time y'all see this, it might be past that time. But I'm gonna be having it out October 27th on SakinaIman.com/films. But you can just go to skinnyimon.com and press films and you'll see it right there. Hood Meditations Manifesting a Lick is fire. You could also catch my other shows. He Wants to Know My Number. You can see Waiting Tables. You can check me out on HBO Max. There's a lot of things. I've been on monologue competitions, so you can check out my performance from the monologue competitions that I won 3 times in a row. yeah, that's pretty much it, man. SakinaIman.com. Check me out.
On your website, they can find everything.
Yeah.
What if someone like is inspired, like they want to donate or something like that too? Can they do stuff like
Look at donations on the bottom of the page. You can click donations. I'm actually gonna, now that you say that, I'm gonna put donations on my main underpage so that people really see it. They could really see it.
See where my mind be? I'm trying.
Your mind be there because the donate button is all the way at the end. Nah, we ain't gonna do that.
You gotta be in the front, like boom.
We go right. Okay.
You know what I mean. All right, last thing
right for
me. Last thing for us. Yes. Rapid for
mind.com/donate. Okay, go ahead.
What advice would you give someone just starting out?
Oh my God. Again, F your feelings. But also listen to your intuition. I know it's a dichotomy, but I would definitely say do as much as you possibly can. When I say that, I mean like Beyonce style, like work like a horse, but not to the point where you feel like you're killing yourself or like you're what's the word, like you're burning out. Don't go past the burnout, but when I say do, I mean work smarter. Like network with people, speak to people that you think are not going to respond to you. Like do all the things that you think might be out of your reach, because trust me when I tell you, it's gonna hit at a certain point. And it's true when they say you're gonna hit 99 no's before you hit that one yes. Yes, it is very true. It's going to take maybe years before you get to a certain point. But it be that one time that you quit and stop, that the next week you would have made it. You know what I mean? So do not stop. Do not quit. Do the thing that you love and that you're passionate about. And it's really going to start to take off. It's almost inevitable that it's going to take off.
Yeah, that's right. You know how many DMs I slid into, like, for sponsors? Like, you know, we need a sponsor for the wrestling channel. Like, I'm looking at different energy drinks. Like, I just slide in the C4, like, fucking Celsius. I do all those things. And then I've slid into wrestlers' DMs, like The Undertaker. I'm like, yo, I'm just trying to see if by chance we could ever get you on here. So,
right.
What's the worst that's going to happen? I'm either get ignored or I'm going to hear no. But what's the positive? He's like, oh, yeah, I love to do it. But what? Boom.
And delegate your tasks. There's a lot to do. There's too much.
Oh, I try to do that. Don't I wrote.
Yeah. Yes, he does. He
tries to do that. Get an assistant on Fiverr, $10 an hour. Get an assistant on Fiverr and have them email as much people as possible. You could just give them a cut and paste generic shit, and then they just change the name. Do what you got to do to, like, maximize your output, because that's really it's in the numbers. It's the magic is in the numbers. So once it's not real magic, it's like after a certain amount, yes, you're going to hear a yes.
One of the secrets is that I learned that I didn't want to learn is you got to do the work. Like, hard. You got to do the work. I used to always think there was a shortcut or I can get there quicker. You just got to do the work.
Absolutely.
All right. Rapid four. Let's go. So the first question.
That's the first question already.
What was the first question?
What advice would you give to people?
No, that's not part of the rapid four, though. You know that. You know we got the rapid four.
that was a bonus one.
So then we should have a rapid five. We should make it a rapid five now.
So okay, that was rapid. So I'm going to make it rapid then. Do the rapid, and I'll make it rapid.
All right, so the second question of the rapid five is, if you weren't doing what you're doing now, what would you be doing?
Oh, I'll be a mathematician for sure. I was a math geek. I won the math medal in college, high school. In high school. Yep.
Okay. Who inspires you?
My family inspires me to always work hard and be super duper great.
I like that. Most people always say family. You know that, right? Like a family member?
Yeah. I mean, who else but the people you love? Like, and also other people's pain inspires me.
That's a good one. I like that one. Third, what's your favorite curse word?
Damn, I feel like it's the same for everybody. Actually, I used to say fuck, but now I'm going to say dead booty. Because, I'm going to say live booty. So it used to be, I would say dead ass. And then I said, that's negative. I'm going to turn into a positive. Everything I say got to sound positive. So instead of saying dead ass, I don't want my ass to be dead. I want my booty to be live. So I say live booty.
Well, no one's ever going to repeat that one. Because
live booty.
Live booty.
All right. And the last one is, if you had any superpower, what would it be?
Oh, teleportation.
Yeah, that's a good one. See? Everyone always says flying.
I'm close with that, though.
That's a good one. This is everybody usually says what Rook says, flying. Like
I hated traveling in airplanes. I hated
about flying.
That's I love movie. Flying.
When you do it every week, or when you do it every other day, no, you ain't.
I've been flying since I was 10 months old. I got more passports than most of my friends.
If you had a job where you had to fly every other day,
like George Clooney in up in the air. I'd be in heaven.
Yeah, I gotta watch that movie too.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you gotta get a traveling job. I see.
Word. Well, you already know what it is. Chance.
Yeah.
Akina is in the house, so make sure we're gonna put all this stuff in the description box. So make sure you check her out. We're gonna definitely do a part two. So like, share, subscribe, do all the good stuff, and I'll let y'all say your goodbyes, and I'll say my goodbye.
Yes, thank you, Chance. Thank you, Daryl. This was dope. I love to be on air with you guys. I'm excited for part two. Check me out, SakinaIman.com, and yeah, peace out, y'all. Thanks for the love.
Rook,
yo, peace and love, man. This was a great show. I ain't got nothing to add, yo.
And me, it was a pleasure. It went so smooth, so quick that I feel like we could have kept on going, but people got stuff to do. So be yourself. Through the money, designer, the drip. Don't got a cap on my spirit, so get bet on myself.